You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I recently took a trip to the Jewish Museum of Maryland to meet an artist whose name is Loring Cornish. Loring's exhibit is called In Each Other's Shoes. It's now on display at the Jewish Museum and explores the connections between the African-American and Jewish communities. I walked through the exhibit with Loring and discussed his work and the ideas behind each piece that he created.
When you come into the lobby, you're greeted with this piece here the piece is called Target Shalom. And I think a lot of advertisements were sent out with. As a matter of fact, you know, I was so happy that the City Paper ran a really beautiful color picture of this. The Urbanite ran a beautiful color of this. The Afro did an advertisement with this in black and white. And so this one piece that says Shalom went all over Baltimore. You know, it was, and I was surprised in all the publications how well it read. And so we had the word peace, you know.
Right.
We had the word peace, you know, in all these advertisements. And so on opening day, I guess people flocked here. I mean, it was close to 400 people here at the museum for the opening. And I was amazed, Mark. I was just amazed. So the piece is called Target Shalom, and it talks about the peace that Robert F. Kennedy, John Kennedy, and Martin Luther King were trying to initiate in the 60s, and how their lives became the targets because of the peace or the transition they were trying to bring in. And so the piece actually reads Shalom, but then on the back of it, it has the faces of these three icons, I call them.
JFK, Martin Luther King, and Robert F. Kennedy.
Right. And they were riddled with bullets. You know, they were shot, so the piece is riddled with bullets. And it has this incredible glass from the 1960s. You ever seen that glass on people's houses? It's mirror, but it has, like, gold designs on it and red designs. So some of that glass is in that piece with these red circles, you know, making out to believe that they're targets, these little red drops of blood and targets. So these three became targets of the peace that they were trying to initiate.
That's a wonderful piece.
Yeah.
So when did you make this?
No, this was made 2 years ago, two and a half years ago. I made it in my home. I actually made this side first, the Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy side.
The pictures of the three men and the bullets.
Right. And I thought the piece was done. Now, when I met Ellen and Paul Saville, I went to their house about 2.5 years ago. They bought some art from me, and I was in their house for about 2 hours, you know, hanging art, moving doorbells, just putting art on their walls. I was so comfortable in their environment. And when I left to get into Paul's truck, I realized that I had to do something about the Jewish struggle. I realized I had to include them in the show that I was doing about the African-American struggle. You know, or the struggles against blacks, period. And so I went home and I began flipping over the huge pieces of work that I did just concerning the black struggle and started incorporating the Jewish struggle into these works. And that's how this show came about.
So what is, for you, the connection? You're younger than I am. I mean, and so when there used to be a real tie between black and Jewish worlds, what's that connect? What made you think that way?
You know, it's so funny. I didn't realize this until Sunday, when my father had some words to say to the press, and he said, "Man, borrow the microphone for a minute." I said, "Sure, Dad." And so he's talking to the people, all these 400 people. And he says, "You know, I used to work for a bakery called Pariser's Bakery.
My grandfather worked there too.
See, look at that." I mean, the connections are unbelievable. The connections are unbelievable. So he says, it must have been all of those, and he used a Jewish term, must have been all of those, what do you call the bread that's wrapped?
Challah.
It must have been all that challah I was bringing home that prompted him to do this show on Jewish, on the Jewish struggles. And everybody laughed. But he made a point there because I didn't realize his connection because he used to take me down to the bakery. And then I realized that I used to live with my grandfather on Brookfield and Whitelock.
Yeah.
And my grandfather used to take care of the building called the Nelmar Apartment Buildings.
Yeah.
And it was filled with Jewish people. And he was the attendant. He was the janitor, the attendant. He took care of all of that. And we used to live with him. So somewhere down deep, way long ago on the inside of me, I was surrounded by Jewish tradition, you know, and hadn't even thought about it, you know, hadn't even thought about it that I was I don't know, familiar with it. And so perhaps when Ellen and Paul showed me how, you know, showed me that kindness in their home for that 2 hours, I don't know, something must have aroused in me. And I think I drew from experiences that I had when I was younger. And not to mention that Ellen had given me, you know, so much memorabilia, you know, to help me do right. the show and stuff. So, wow. Yeah.
So your exhibit's in here. It says,
yes.
Lauren Cornish in each other's shoes.
Now, as we go into the exhibit, you'll see there's a piece that actually reads Forgive.
Yes.
It's about 8 feet long.
Lots of pennies.
Now, Mark, the guy who actually put the show together, he mentioned that people can probably look at this sign and say, well, we'll forgive before we even go into the show because of some of the subject matter, which I thought was interesting. I thought that was an interesting comment, you know, because the show deals with slavery, it deals with, you know, the Holocaust and some
What's
other...
What's the connection with the pennies and forgive? Anything?
Well, forgiveness to me is like one step at a time. Now, there are thousands of pennies on there.
Uh-huh.
And I can say, Mark, you know what, I forgive you. But when I see the window that you broke the next day, you know, those feelings, you know, I forgave you, but God dang it, I got to fix this window. You know, then I got to go to the store, another step. I got to pay money. Then they got to come and fix it. I got time. There's so many levels of forgiveness that it's just one step at a time, you know. And it may be years in the making before we can actually completely resolve an issue.
So you said you were about to tell the story about meeting the Savills, which that got you here.
Yeah. As I had mentioned, you know, well, anyway, Ellen, who's standing right here, she had seen a piece of mine down at the Hilton, huge piece. I was, you know, commissioned to do a piece of art, and so she found this piece of art. She was up touching it and rubbing it with some other ladies, and she was like, "Who is this guy?" So she tracked me down, and she found me on the internet, called me, came to my house, picked out some artwork. It was her birthday. So her husband came by, and they had to decide which piece they were going to buy. I'll try to make it so good. And they couldn't decide on which piece to buy. So Paul had the great idea. Just buy them both, honey.
It's a great birthday present.
And Ellen, you should have seen her face, you know. You should have seen her face. You know, here's the story I like. Paul asked her what she wanted for her birthday, and she said she wanted a piece of my art. And that was the most touching thing. I mean, because she could have had anything, you know. She could have flew to Hawaii, you know. She could have, you know, got the latest pair of shoes, you know. But she wanted a piece of my art, which I thought was really endearing to me. And so, anyway, so we take the art and take it to her house and hang it. And I'm in their house, Ellen, you say, for 4 hours. And we're forming a friendship in this four-hour thing. In the meantime, in 2 months, I have a show that I'm about to produce at Morgan on the struggles of blacks, you know, just the struggles of blacks, so to speak. And it's going to be done in 2 months, and I'm working on the pieces and getting it together. And so we finish hanging the pieces, and Ellen fixed this great meatloaf, and Paul has this great mustard, you know, this Savile Foods. Oh, God, it's really good. So anyway, I'm sitting in Paul's car, getting ready to go home, and it dawns on me. I don't know what came over me, but I said I had to include the struggles of the Jewish people into this show. I just had to, and I don't know where it came from. Ellen?
We never talked about us being Jewish. When I was at your house, you spent about 45 minutes talking about your crosses, and you're a very spiritual man. I never mentioned I was Jewish, and when you were in our home, I guess you saw I have Judaica all around. And I guess somehow that triggered things.
That's what she alludes it to be. But I really don't remember seeing the Judaica, honestly. Honestly, Ellen, I know you always say that, but I love the fact when she goes, he talked about his crosses. You know, I'm in the Jewish.
It's okay. I was very interested. And the crosses are beautiful. And actually, some Jewish people have bought your crosses because they're so magnificent.
So anyway, I went home, that when Paul dropped me off, immediately I went home and flipped over these huge, whether it's 6x6 canvases of art. I flipped them over. And I started doing art with Jewish themes to it and combining the black struggles with the Jewish struggle. And it was amazing how this show started developing, Mark. I mean, things and similarities started coming to life that I had no idea of. Let's just take, for example, Ghetto. There's a piece. There's
Which
a piece.
That?
Let's come on down here.
Let's take a look at it.
There's a piece in the show called A Hanging in the Ghetto. And come here, I'll show you the other side first. The other side, on this side of the piece, there are the faces of Martin Luther King, Robert F. Kennedy, and John Kennedy. And they're looking onward. And you have these three figures. What do you see, Mark?
What do I see?
What do you see?
I see what looks like two women and a man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because of their hips.
Because they're hips.
Possibly two black
women. I was going to say black women.
Two black women.
Just from the body shapes, mm-hmm. what they look like, mm-hmm. and a man.
Okay.
They could be looking at something. Mm-hmm. They could have their heads bowed.
Mm. Mm. Interesting.
Or they could be something worse.
Something worse as?
As being lynched.
That's exactly what's going on, Mark. They're being lynched. And it's funny because I never saw the figures. All I saw was people being lynched, you know. All I saw was three people being hung. And it could be two women and a man being hung. We took these pieces to, what was the name of the?
Oheb
Shalom. And Rabbi Fink, when he saw these pieces that was mixed with both black and Jewish facts from the past, he asked to have these three pieces shown in his synagogue. And they do a service with
the Beth El AME Church.
All right.
It's a wonderful weekend where Reverend Reed does the sermon from the Bima on
right.
Friday night. And on Sunday, Rabbi Fink goes to the Beth El AME Church and does the sermon. So,
wow.
And it's continued, which
right.
is wonderful. But when Rabbi Fink saw this piece...
Before Rabbi Fink got there.
I'm sure, yes.
I remember it began in a conversation that I moderated for the Blues, where I kind of was challenging blacks and Jews and their congregations to do something beyond sitting around and talking to each other. Like they all liked each other. They should start combining the youth together to get to know one another and to dialogue and the things that they could struggle together. One of the things that came out of that conversation we had was this thing between Bethel AME and Oheb Shalom that has survived and grown between the two congregations. Because, I mean, that is part of what's missing a lot is this. There used to be this intimate interaction, sometimes positive, sometimes negative, but always a very intimate interaction between the black and Jewish worlds in this town, and they've really divided and separated.
Wow.
Not completely, but, you know, in many ways.
Right. And it's interesting for us to hear that was the impetus for this. Right. And when Rabbi Fink saw this, he thought of the three civil rights young men who were killed.
Sure, Goodman and Cheney.
Right. Two blacks, one black and two Jewish.
Right. And so just like you gave the relationship, how the relationship between the two churches got started and how this unfolded just right here, that's how the similarities in this show started unfolding. Just like that. Even these three pieces here, which are done in original typeset. Now, the words are all backwards in these pieces. There are three pieces. And when the printer lays his type, he lays it backwards in order for it to read right.
Right.
Now, in these three pieces of work, the type is laid backwards, representing that the world did some backwards things that they thought was right. You know, and even in the hitting, it reads, once upon a time. You see it, Mark?
Yeah.
What is it?
Whites only.
Once
upon a time, whites only. You make me read backwards, are you?
Yes,
all
right. I am.
Fine. It looks like once upon a time, the Hutzlers? No.
Those are two O's.
Those are two O's? The Holocaust.
Uh-huh. And then you have this one over here.
Once upon a time, slavery.
And even in these three pieces, the phrase once upon a time, it usually refers to a fairy tale.
Right.
But even in this sense, they're all flipped. You know, once upon a time is a reality in these particular pieces. And this typeset is mostly from the 40s, you know, the original copperheads and stuff like that. So even these pieces date back to the 40s and to the 50s.
You're tuned in to the Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. That was the first part of my recent interview with artist Loring Cornish, taped as we walked through his current exhibit called In Each Other's Shoes at the Jewish Museum of Maryland. You can catch Loring and me, along with Anthro Pietila, for a discussion at the Jewish Museum this Sunday, February 27th, from 2 to 4 p.m. We'll be discussing the history of discrimination toward both blacks and Jews in Baltimore, as well as the current tensions between the two communities. Stay with us. We're going to take a quick break and be right back with the rest of my interview with artist Loring Cornish. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. This hour, you've been hearing my recent interview with artist Loring Cornish, recorded at the Jewish Museum of Maryland, where we walked through his exhibit, In Each Other's Shoes. We'll continue the interview now with Loring describing one of his largest works of art.
Let's walk over to this particular piece on the far right-hand wall. From here, you'll see a huge... perhaps you can make it out from here. Yes, uh-huh.
The Jewish star?
Yes, the Jewish star and the numbers. Now, from here...
These are all done on glass, by the way, multicolored glass.
Yes, they're all done on glass. So you have all this...
Stained glass.
And the thing about it is, with most... Oh, yes. The thing about it is, with these pieces, you have steel on glass.
Uh-huh.
You've noticed that?
Uh-huh.
Most of the pieces, there's steel... on glass, you know.
Right.
So you have the strength. You have the strength of a people, and you also have the weaknesses of the people. Mm-hmm. You know, even this one here with all the nails on the glass. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of nails piled up in these three piles, but it's on glass, and the steel is on the glass, not the glass on the steel. So there's a strength even in the weaknesses of people.
That's really interesting. So where did that come from for you, that idea?
It just innately grew. It innately grew because the glass was done first. But I noticed that the glass, it didn't seem strong enough for the show. It didn't seem strong enough. And I just needed another element to show the strength of the people. And the steel was it.
I'm curious then. What this show says to you. What did it say to you when you started it? And what did it say to you as you did it? And what does it say to you when you finished it?
Wow. That's a good question, because I've never even contemplated that. My whole idea was to relate the struggles of the people. Here it is. In relating the struggles of the people, I found that the only difference in the struggles of the people is the color of the skin. Because pain is pain. Death is death. Slavery is slavery, no matter what form or what territory or what time period. Here we go. We have the slaveries of the 1800s, 1800s. The majority of the Jewish people in Germany. Can we consider that to be slavery?
The Holocaust.
Yes. Can not being able to do what you want to do, bound and gagged.
Watching the children uniform from you.
Ah.
And sold, killed.
You take away the color, you take away the name, you still have the same blood. So I think that's what it's left me with. In this particular piece here, we were talking...
The Jewish Star with the numbers on it.
Yes. The piece is called Jilted, 6877208. Now, if you look, there's a huge Jewish star, if you can imagine, on a plate of beautiful stained glass with all this steel that makes up the Jewish star. There's a huge number that reads 6877208 that goes over one of the straight bottom lines of the Jewish star. But this star is jilted. You notice, Mark? It's not perfect like the stars are. Normally, you see them, they're all perfect. They have the same amount of 90-degree angles. This one is like off-kiltered.
Right.
And it talks about how the Jewish people have been jilted. They've been pushed, they've been shoved, they've been yanked, but it's still together. And the number itself is a representation of over the 6 million Jews that have died. You see? And it's amazing because I didn't plan that. These numbers, a friend of mine named Rashad Williams, who did all the metalwork at the base of the pieces to hold them together, he said, listen, here, maybe you can use this pile of metal. In the metal were these numbers just scattered about. And as I was putting the pieces together, Mark, I was like, oh, my God. Wait a minute. 1 million. 1, 2, 3, 4. I need 7 numbers. There's 7 numbers.
These were actual numbers. You didn't make these numbers. These numbers existed, and you put them in there.
These numbers existed in a pile of metal that he gave me in a box. Well, it wasn't pre-planned. He said, yeah, I think you can use this. Just take this. Right. Just take this junk, so to speak. Take this junk. And I said, well, is one of these numbers a 6? One of them was a 6. And Ellen always thinks... And I had no idea. Now see all the little silver cups up there and stuff like that. What did you tell me about those, Ellen?
Well, when I look at this, I see. I think about when Jews had to leave their homes and they had to pack a small suitcase. They thought they were going to a camp. They were going to a camp to a
relocation one of, camp.
A relocation camp, right? And they packed the most important things, which might have been a Kiddush cup, which. That looks like a Kiddush cup, or their special silver that maybe was handed down through generations, and that was their most precious belongings. In addition, on the star, if you see, Mark, across where the numbers are, it almost there's 8 kind of look like candle holders, and then one in the middle. It almost looks like a Hanukkah. And then up on the right-hand side, there are two holders, kind of like, you know, Shabbos candles. And Loring is so intuitive. I don't know how he does this. He sometimes describes things to me as he's making them, and I can't even imagine. But when I actually see them and he describes them, I'm in awe, truly.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
There's a piece here. It's funny describing pieces to radio listeners. You know, and but there's, if you can just imagine a huge piece of work, imagine it 10 feet high and about 10 feet across, and the entire piece is covered in glass beads, just beautiful colors of glass beads from top to bottom, from left to right, and
a green hue to it all.
Of a green hue, a beautiful green hue to it all. And anyway, these glass beads, there must be thousands. I mean, let's say a few thousand here. Each piece of glass represents hundreds of souls that lost their lives in the passage, and also the souls, right, and also those who lost their lives in the Holocaust. But what I wanted to capture, Mark, was that these people had beautiful lives before these tragic events took place. We always focus on it after and during, but even before, they snatched you out of the radio station, Mark, and you could no longer do your radio show.
That
happened earlier. Yeah,
did they? We came back anyway.
Yes. I love this guy. I really do. So they, you know, and I wanted to represent the lives of these the beautiful lives that the people had before the tragic events. And so the piece is on this side of the piece. It's called Souls Awaiting Justice. Souls Awaiting Justice. Now, the same piece on the other side, as you walk around it, all the pieces are two-sided pieces mostly. Now, this side of the piece is called Bodies. And as you can see, it's the same size, 10 by 10 basically.
Brown. Representing all the bodies.
Yes, yes. Folds of leather all on top of one another. And it representing the bodies, how they were crammed into the ships on top of one another. And remember, it was dark down there. No light, hardly any air, just bodies on top of one another, sleeping in their own feces from time to time, you know. And then, hundred years later, so to speak, the number of Jews who fell into those massive graves, their bodies on top of one another again, just bodies falling, well, they shoot you, and you fall into the grave on top of one another. And you know, this occurred to me the other day, is that sometimes you don't die when people shoot you. You're still living. So you're falling into a grave of all these dead people, and you're there, and you're immobilized. And who knows how many days these people stood alive before they died. And then their skin, as this piece is dark brown, their skin began to change. The color, the freshness was gone. And the color of their skin began to be brown and, you know, dark brown and dried up. And at the bottom of this, you'll see the menorah, a six-candle representation here of the 6 million Jews who died in the Holocaust, and then a pair of slave chains.
Ah, yes. Right.
My friend Rashad Williams really did a good job. I asked him to design.
He did the frames.
He did the frames. I paid him dearly, but he did the frames. He's got to be paid. Now, Mark, what is the common thing in both the Jewish synagogue and the Christian church? What's the common thing?
The common thing.
The common thing.
Dun, 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 dun. The common thing.
You're sitting there wonderfully, Ellen? Having a wonderful.
You said, "Oh, the pew." This was the pew that we're looking at right now. Thanks.
Anytime.
It's the common theme in any congregation, you know, and you know, you take away synagogue, you take away church. It's just a title. It's a place of worship, so to speak. And people sit here on the pew as they view the video that talks about the show here at the show.
It's a great video. Really.
Yeah. There's also numbers here. When people come to the show, Mark, they can call a number. And I will be speaking about the pieces to them over the phone.
Most of the pieces have a number. And you actually bring your own cell phone. And it's called Guide by Cell. And you just, by the piece, it gives you instructions. And you can hear Loring. If you're not fortunate enough to be here when Loring is here and giving a tour, you can still hear him giving a tour.
Yeah. And
That's great.
Yeah. The one of the other pieces that I wanted to talk about is this piece in the back, or any of them you can really talk about.
There's
so much to look at.
His dream and his glass piece.
Oh, yeah. This is a huge glass piece that's reflective. It's made out of all mirrors, and it's two-sided. Again, it's, what is that, 8 feet tall, about, 8 feet wide. On one side, it reads Kings, and the other side, it reads Dream on the same side. Now, if you walk around the piece, you walk around it, I love it because it's all reflectory. You see yourself in the piece. You might look kind of good there, Mark. You're looking kind of handsome over there. You see yourself, but you see these words bigger than life. You see the words justice, equality.
Honor others.
It's funny that you would say that because that's the name of the piece.
Honor others.
Inside of dignity and respect. And so you're looking at these words really, really large, but you see yourself and where you stand with justice and where you stand with equality. And do you honor others as if you honor yourselves? And, you know, and the show is called In Each Other's Shoes. So I thought that Honor Others was a perfect title for a piece that you can actually see yourself in. It's all hand-cut glass, hand-cut mirror. I cut each piece. Yes. In one of my houses on Parkwood, I broke all the glass. I took a hammer and I didn't know about glass cutting, Mark. So my first house, I went to the glass company and I broke all the glass with a hammer and I glued each piece of broken glass to the house. When I bought my second house, a guy named Mr. Jackson, a really good stain artist guy here in Baltimore, he's 92 years old. He taught me how to cut glass. And so since then, I've been cutting all the glass.
It looks better when you cut it.
It looks, yeah, yeah, yeah. It gives it another uniformed look. It gives it a, this piece here, I wanted Elie Wiesel's book to come to life. I wanted his book to come to life. I wanted his story to really read. So the piece again is huge. What is that? I don't know what's that. 8 feet by 7 feet. Yeah. And so the piece, it's made with all black glass. It's all black glass under here, black cracked glass, And then I poured streams and streams and streams of paint over the black glass and gold and reds and a little yellow there to give like a cold rain kind of feeling. And then I wanted to put his word night in huge bold letters and his name huge because people who read the book can really relate to what's inside the book.
Did you read it?
Yes, I did. This is one of the pieces of material that Ellen bought me in the memorabilia when she heard that I was doing. 3 days later, she called me and said, "Loring, I just called to thank you for helping us." And I said, "Ellen, you're not going to believe what's going on." She said, "What do you mean, Loring? What do you mean?" I said, "I started doing Jewish art." She says, "What are you talking about?" I said, "I'm going to include the struggles of the Jewish people in my Black American show, in the show about blacks." She says, "What?" I said, "Yeah, you're not going to believe it." She says, "Well, is there anything I can do?" Isn't that what you said?
And I said, "Well, let me help you with the research." So what I did was all the Judaic in my house that I thought perhaps he had noticed but maybe didn't know the meaning of everything, I packed those all in one bag. I brought another bag full of books and marked places that I thought he might be interested in reading. The one thing that I purchased was Elie Wiesel's Night because in my opinion, if he was going to do some sort of similarities, I thought that would be a perfect book to read and to... you know, to use in the show. I had no idea this is what would come out of it. It's amazing.
Even the red at the bottom of the book, you know, it's almost like, you know, it's, you know, I don't want to keep being harp on the shooting and all the bad things that happened, but hey, it is what it is. But you see all these drops of rain? The drops of rain go into a puddle of blood down at the bottom of the piece. So, but this, come here, Mark, I'll show you this. On the other side of this piece here, this symbol here.
Letter.
Chai.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, oh, it's a letter.
There's two letters.
I've always seen this around people's necks.
Right.
I never knew what it meant. You know, but I saw it all the time. I was like, I wanted to. So I called Ellen. I called her all the time. Paul, her husband, is just so great. Thank you, Paul. Called her all the time. So I said, "Ellen, the thing that people wear around their necks." Yeah. And she told me it was a symbol for life. And I said, "Well, I want to do something with that. This piece is called The Fires of Life. You see the tree of life in there, you know, you see the word high, the word love, and the word life. And then I found out this word, l'chaim. Oh, l'chaim. L'chaim. Yeah, to life. So, but I wanted to do the symbol, but I felt like I couldn't do the symbol because I didn't want to disrespect it. And so I told, I said, Ellen, you know, I want to do it, but I don't want to disrespect something that I don't know nothing about. And so she brought me.
Yeah, we brought a lot of different calligraphy of Hebrew letters, and we picked. You picked a beautiful high, in green, and it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yes, I was really nervous about reproducing, you know, someone else's
another language.
Yeah, I just did. I didn't want to disrespect it. So, but it came out. I thought it. It came out nice.
So, March on Washington?
Yeah. Well, here you are. This side of the piece actually reads March on Washington. And again, you're looking at a huge piece. Now, this one is actually 8x4 in length, and it stands over 8 feet with the railing. The March on Washington is red. Is done in red, signifying the struggle and the turmoil, the bloodshed. But then again, underneath the red mark, you see all this beautiful green again, just like the hue green of the souls awaiting justice.
Yes, green of life.
Yes.
Yes, birth and growth.
Yes, that's exactly. How did you know? Damn. That's exactly what it is. And so, but this side, right? You actually
shoes.
Shoes, signifying hundreds and hundreds of shoes marching together.
You know, I had a totally different feeling about what those shoes meant. That's interesting.
God, tell me what you had.
I thought about the shoes taken from the Jews during the Holocaust, and these piles of shoes of the Jews that were killed is what I thought about. But these are the shoes that walked the streets for freedom.
Yes. Yes.
Well, they're just this other side of the same shoe, aren't they?
Yes. You know, it's so funny because I don't visit museums. I don't know why I don't. But so I had no idea about the shoes at the Holocaust Museum.
I haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
I have not been there yet. So.
Yes. So it represents the whole 1963 March on Washington. You know, and just to see how tightly the shoes, the soles, the blackness of the shoes are together. You see those white squares?
Mm-hmm.
The opposing forces just as tightly together, too. So you have these two forces, you know, one believing in one cause, the other one believing in another cause. You know, both of them equally believing in their cause and what they feel is right. Mm-hmm. This one here, now I understand that the plural for menorah is menorot. It's menorot.
Menorot.
Yeah. Now there's a menorah here. Made out of glass. Again, an 8x4 piece, full of color. There's a menorah made out of glass. You see it, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
And what else do you see?
Well, you see a candle in the middle?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
The centerpiece of the menorah?
Right. And but that one isn't made out of glass, is it?
No, it's steel.
There you go. So you have the glass menorah. And the steel menorah, again showing the strength and the fragility of a people. You have this huge sun in the left-hand corner, and then right to it is another interpretation of the tree of life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of bursting the stars too, as well.
I know, huh? I know. I know.
So tell me about this one over here, this dark piece.
Yes. It's this piece, I guess what's that, about 10 feet long, looks like about 5 feet high, and it has chains in it and burned wood in it, it has a gate in it, has this, these are...
like chains. It's like
chainsaws.
Right.
Chainsaws. And you have barbed wire mixed all up in there as well. And so it's a very, very dark piece, as you said. And so this is my interpretation of Auschwitz. Hmm. Now, Mark, here's an interesting fact. You walk onto the other side of Auschwitz, same piece, but on the other side of it, this is my interpretation of the Wailing Wall. So it's kind of weird because you have on one side you have this area where people are praying for peace, You know, it's a peaceful time. You know, people are putting their prayers on the wall. They're praying. And they're praying against tragedies such as this, such as Auschwitz. You know, so you have two opposites, you know, in one piece. And then, I'm not up on this, but Karen Falk could probably explain this a little better. But she had mentioned that in some instances that Israel was given back to the people, maybe, and it, because America felt, or the world felt, a little sorrowful for what happened at Auschwitz. Now, Karen can probably bring that out a little bit more.
About why Jews were in the whole Palestine now, in Israel,
yes.
Is that what you mean? Yeah, I was thinking a lot of the whole piece makes me this thing. I was looking at this, then I couldn't help but think about Israelis and Palestinians as I'm looking at this stuff at the same time. It kept coming over my head. Is that your piece too at the top? Did you paint that?
Yes. Now that piece is huge. What is that? That must be 20. It's 24 feet long. That piece, 4 feet high, 24 feet long. And it's black and white, almost like people say reminds them of a Pollock. What's the guy's name?
Jackson Pollock.
Jackson Pollock. Yes. But in it, you'll see three small words that don't come right out at you. I would try to make you go over there and make you see if you can find them. Maybe I'll let them do it.
No, go ahead.
Go look up there, Mark. Look up there real quick. Quick. Then look through it.
Oh, I see.
What do you see?
Easy.
Uh-huh.
What else do I see here?
Uh-huh.
See, easy.
Uh-huh.
Hard to see with the roof. Oh, I see what you mean by three small words. I'm not going to find the other words. I'm not going to find these words.
Yeah, you are, Mark. Come on. You only got 30 seconds.
Let's see.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I'm looking. Easy, and what does that say? Ain't.
Uh-huh.
It ain't easy.
What's the first word on there?
There it is up there, sideways.
Yes.
It ain't easy.
Come on.
I'm trying, I can't see it. I have bad eyes. It ain't easy. I can't see what it says.
It's suffering.
Ain't easy suffering.
Yeah. Suffering ain't easy.
Suffering ain't easy.
Suffering ain't easy,
suffering
Mark.
Suffering ain't easy. But it is.
Why do you say that?
I think suffering is part of existence.
I see.
And it's how we get through it. It's how we look at it. How we... if we acknowledge the suffering, mm-hmm. then we can work at overcoming it and living through it. Mm-hmm. But you acknowledge that existence is suffering. It's other things too, but existence is suffering.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. The bottom piece here, it's a beautiful colored piece. Mm-hmm. I thought, and some of the pieces were made like 2.5 years ago, and some of them were made just... what is this, February? Were made just last year because I wanted the show to have a more contemporary feel to it. And so I made this piece before they came to pick up the pieces. And it talks about where we've been and where we're going. And there's this huge face in the piece, Mark. It's a huge face.
Oh, yes, right.
You see it? It's huge, huge, made out of all these incredible colors. And it's this beautiful colored road. I mean, just as if you can imagine glass and a road going each way, up and down, in and out, around the corner, back. And, you know, the piece again is what? I don't know, what's that, 10 feet long by 8 feet high. And it's made from all cracked glass and stained glass of all these magnificent colors. And it talks about this huge road of where we've been and where we're going. Michelle Wilkerson from the Reginald Lewis Museum actually gives a great interpretation about this piece. As a matter of fact, if you If you call 410-202-3051 and press 11, you can hear her voice talk about this piece, as a matter of fact. Yes, that's how the cell thing functions. So people who come down, bring your cell phone, just and punch in a number and punch in the number of the piece, and you can hear different people talk about the different works. Ah, made from all shoes. On one side it reads Montgomery Bus Boycott, and it's made out of all these newer tennis shoes,
right,
like what the kids would wear today.
Right.
Yes, 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 yes. Now, on the other side of the piece, it's my interpretation of the Montgomery bus boycott. And again, it's all these shoes from the 1950s and 60s, all cut up and smashed down. And it has the red clay dirts of Montgomery, Alabama, sprinkled over these shoes.
It almost has the feel of like skeletons.
I love people's interpretation of the art. I love it. Oh, yeah. Wow. Shoot, all you need is a little noise in the background of people walking and clamoring. You can hear it. You know, I've never felt it like I'm feeling it now. I never felt this piece in that manner. I think the word skeleton really did something to the interpretation of this piece.
I mean, all the marching people did in the 60s and the walking people did in the 60s. Picket lines, registering people to vote, walking for freedom, marching for freedom. You know, remember the song, you're a walk, you're gonna talk. Your eyes on freedom. That's like,
yeah,
walking.
Yeah. And that was a powerful movement. Just the walk alone, you know, the movement of walking and the power of that.
Does all your work have this deep social conscience to it that you do?
You know, it has. Now there's some lighter pieces, of course. So, but most of them have definitely a meaning. Definitely have it. Even those two pieces over there on the wall. One interpretation is there's an interpretation of the children wandering through the wilderness. And there's a piece over there where this one ribbon wraps itself around itself about 1,000 times in this one area. And it talks about how the people were, you know, the old interpretation of the Bible where God talks about the children wandering in this one area that was only supposed to take them 40 days. It took them 40 years.
Right.
And so that piece has this ribbon that just ravels around forever. You know, and then next to it there's a piece that talks about the making of the Star of David. You know, the Bible talks about God created the world in 7 days.
Right.
Well, I interpreted, well, how was the Star of David created? So there's all these pieces of sticks kind of forming itself into the Star of David, but the Star of David hadn't been formed yet. So some of it does have lighter interpretations.
This is great work by an inspired man and artist.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
Lauren Cornish. This has been great, man. Thank you for letting us do this with you today.
It's my pleasure. It really is.
That was Lauren Cornish. His exhibit exploring shared histories and connections between the Jewish and African-American communities is called In Each Other's Shoes, and it's on display at the Jewish Museum until July 17th. You can catch Lauren and me, along with writer Anthro Pietila, for a discussion at the Jewish Museum this Sunday, February 27th, from 2 to 4 p.m. We'll be discussing the history of discrimination toward both blacks and Jews in Baltimore, as well as the current tensions between our two communities. We're going to take a quick break, but don't go away, because right after this break, we'll be taking a visit to an oyster farm on the Choptank River, just outside Cambridge, Maryland. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we'll be right back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555.